welcome back to another exciting episode of the Captain America Minute, where we examine the 2011 Joe Johnston-directed feature, Captain America, the First Avenger, at the rate of 1 minute of screen time per episode. I'm one of your hosts just a few miles from Kitty Hawk, North Carolina. This is Jim O'Kane of TVDads.com.
And I'm Brian Fees, a graphic novelist and lifelong Avengers comic book reader. And our third co-host, Hal Bryant, is on assignment deep within enemy territory today, so we'll carry on without him. But Jim, we have a third.
Yes, we do. We have a wonderful guest here. He's an author and also a professor at New York University as a professor of classics in the modern world. Dr. Peter Minick, who has a really great book out now, Tony Stark, Odysseus, and the Myths of Behind Marvel. And it's a fascinating book. Peter, thanks for joining us today.
No, it's my pleasure. It's really great to be here and talk about something I'm very passionate about, which is Marvel and mythology.
Wonderful. Wow. Well, Brian, why don't you do the honor since Hal is out, if you could give us the synopsis of this particular minute.
Minute 43. The submarine slips beneath the dark waters of the East River, its engines churning. Steve Rogers, his newly enhanced body surging with power, dives in after it, slicing through the current with furious kicks. He catches up to the sub, his fist shattering the window with a single punch. Gripping the canopy, he rips it off, water rushing in and yanks Heinz Kruger out, hauling him to the surface. With a heave, Steve tosses the spy onto the dock, where he lands with a wet thud. Steve looms over him, chest heaving, voice sharp. "Who the hell are you?" Kruger, battered but defiant, sneers. "The first of many. Cut off one head, he says, biting down on a hidden cyanide capsule in his mouth. "Two more shall take its place. Hail Hydra." His body convulses, then goes still, lifeless eyes staring skyward. Steve, catching his breath, stares down at Kruger, confusion swirling in his mind at the cryptic words and sudden death. His gaze shifts to his own muscular arms, the reality of his transformation sinking in, a mix of awe and uncertainty flickering across his face.
What an exciting end to our man Kruger. This is, you know, it's such a great hero versus antagonist moment in, you know, all just compressed in time, one of which is, it seems to be a timeless story. Everything old really is new again. And Peter, I think that's kind of the thesis of your book, that, we have these 20th and 21st century heroes that can trace their roots back, 5,000-6,000 years.
Yeah, exactly. And I started with this journey through the mythology of Marvel by an editor asking me what happens when someone who studies ancient mythology studies the mythology of Marvel, and what does that tell us about our own mythology? And, you know, I went into it, someone who knew Marvel really through my daughters, who would take me to the movies. And I spent a year watching everything, and more importantly, reading the comics and telling my wife I was working, right? And, I ended up really loving Marvel, the comics, the MCU, a lot of the TV shows. I'd been lucky enough to work with Christopher Marcus and Stephen McFeely, who are the screenwriters of this. And so my question was, you know, how much do the writers know that they're borrowing from ancient mythology, and how much is it kind of in the ether and we just pick up on it? And I think it's a combination of both. And that's what's so exciting. And I think when it is a combination of both, the myth is still telling us something important.
Yeah, in your book, I haven't read all of it yet, because as I said before we began this show, that it's a bit like eating a cheesecake. You just have to get a little slice of it at a time. Because I find myself reading your book, going to the internet, reading some more, going back to your book. So it's very, you have to have a couple of things open at the same time to do it. And it really, I think it's, your book is a great springboard to get people further into the classics than they might have in a passing knowledge. But, so much are classic, iconic tales that have to be told over and over again. I think human beings more than anything else are a storytelling species. And, these events resonate through us. I mean, I think you had pointed out that, Captain America versus Red Skull isn't that much different from Achilles versus Hector or other, other people from history. And it is a beautiful way to kind of get sucked back into the past and learning those classic tales.
Yeah, exactly. And I think what makes Captain America works so well in all his manifestations is that, you know, he's not that simple. He's problematic. He butts up against Shield, he butts up against Tony Stark. You know, he has his own ideas about certain things, which, like Achilles, right? We all want to be the guy who says, F you, this is what I believe, I'm not doing it. But sometimes the cost of that can be really damaging. And I think Captain America kind of really asks us, what is a hero in a beautiful way? I love the line when Tony says to him, you know, sometimes I just want to punch you in the face because you're like so perfect and so right all the time. And yet, you know, Captain America is kind of the best of us in many ways. So I love his complexity, and I love how Marvel don't shy away from that.
Yeah, the tagline, the focal point of Captain America, as I understand it, is, or at least as Marvel explains it, Captain America always represents the American dream, the best of America, even when America itself falls short. So this often puts Captain America in conflict with whatever our current leaders or our culture or our ethos are at the moment, because Cap's always got his lodestone is always that idealized American dream. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, and I think, you know, for me, the hero behind Captain America is Jack Kirby. And, you know, when they premiered Captain America in 39, he was punching Hitler in the face. We were a year away from entering the war. A lot of people were really angry about that. They had to have police protection. You know, there were people who, you know, did not agree necessarily with what Kirby and Simon were doing with that character, but they were adamant that this was a tyrant and Captain America stands against tyrants, and that's what they were going to do. And there was a bravery behind that. And of course, both Kirby and Simon go on to serve as combat GIs in World War II. So, you know, I kind of love the origins of Marvel in Captain America, and the fact that they were passionate that, you know, these immigrant kids, these first kind of generation Americans, that stood for them of what America was. And I'm an American now, but I'm originally from England. And I remember my mum telling me about when the GIs came, you know, in 1944, and it was like they were heroes to the people in England because they were bringing this idea of freedom and democracy. And I think Cap represents that. And I think he's still a really powerful image, and he's a good reminder. Yeah,
You mentioned Jack Kirby. I'm sorry, Jim,
no,
but
go
I
ahead,
want
Brian.
to follow up on your mention of Jack Kirby because Kirby in particular, Stan Lee also often spoke or wrote about the sense that he was creating or they were creating a modern American mythology with these characters, with this Marvel universe. And but I've always been ambivalent about that because it seems to me a myth needs to be more than an expansive story about heroes and gods and the creation of a universe. A real myth is something that people once believed, isn't it? I mean, people used to believe in Zeus and Thor as actual gods before they became characters in comic books.
Right. And you're absolutely right. And myths only survive because they're worth telling. So you only keep telling the myth if it has a meaning to the people watching it or experiencing it. Otherwise, the myth just dies out. And what I do in my academic work is I look at what myths mean. And it, you know, students get very confused with myths because there's so many different versions of myths depending on who's telling the story. But that's what's so fascinating. Why is that story being told? And what lies underneath the myth? And that was kind of the way I went into this book, is like, why are we telling these stories? And what do they mean for us today? And, you know, what can they tell us about our own kind of hopes and dreams? So I think that Marvel does that, you know, perhaps more than it likes. And I know from working with the screenwriters that a lot of the time they butt up against the studios and they don't want certain storylines, and they push back at it. But having sat in a room with these guys, they are to me modern myth makers. And that's definitely what they're trying to do. And I think it was the same for the graphic creators as well. And I think that's why these characters survive.
We are all of the same rough same generation of reading, not Golden Age, but Silver Age comics, where the people that we knew growing up were, many of them were World War II veterans, and to us they had a certain mythology to them because most of them didn't talk about the war. I mean, the ones that I knew, my dad, who was a vet, usually said the ones that did the most talking did the least during the war. And it was kind of like, since we didn't have their stories, we kind of built them into it. And what we found was in the comic books, you know, you found the Howling Commandos, you found, Steve and Bucky fighting their way through, occupied Europe. And that, I think, that was the belief that Brian was talking about here with, I think, having that myth that you had a belief, maybe, I mean, we believed that they were all in the, the band of brothers kind of a situation, that everybody was fighting the war, everybody was in the industry. Some of the people were just, writing, invoices and stuff like that. But everybody gave a small part of it. And I think that we needed those stories to fill in the gaps.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think that, of course, one of the reasons why, and I do a lot of work with vets today. I served in the Royal Marines in England while in college. And although I never saw combat, I understand a little bit about how these things work. And I get to work with American combat veterans now. And of course, any war is violent and full of trauma and death and destruction. No wonder people don't want to talk about it. And I think sometimes when you watch the movies, you might go, these are incredibly violent, right? There's almost a kind of hyping up of violence, which I think a lot of veterans and combat veterans find difficult. And that is a way that we sensationalize things. But I do think, having said that, the movies still deal with the cost of violence. I think of the storyline that runs through the MCU Captain America, that Bucky becomes the Winter Soldier and kills Tony Stark's parents, and Steve knows this, right? And doesn't tell him. And that is an incredible fraught thing to play. And that was brilliant, a piece of screenwriting. And I know the studio didn't want that and they fought for it. But that kind of moral complexity that comes out of having to step up and use violence, I think Marvel's actually quite good at handling that a lot of the times.
Yeah, and although it's not happening in this minute, I mean, we know what Steve loses in this, even though he didn't get to fight the rest of the war. He does defeat his enemy. His enemy is sent to another dimension. But the whole idea that at the end of this, spoilers ahead, is that he lost 70 years in of his life. Yeah, that's what he gave up was the life he could have had with the girl of his dreams.
Yeah, he's a tragic character, right? I mean, he's a lot like Achilles. He's a lot like Heracles. In fact, I love getting this particular minute because it's the birth of the hero. It's the time when he suddenly, comes to fruition, and it's with Hydra, and the Hydra is the second labor of Heracles, Hercules,
Right,
right?
right.
In a way, one of his most dangerous and the actual. Yeah, sure. Maybe I'm jumping ahead here, but the actual phrase that Kruger says is almost word for word an ancient Greek phrase, which became kind of a popular saying, which was hydren temnein, which is cutting off the head of the hydra, became a phrase for anything impossible, right? So I just
Yeah.
love that connection right in that moment. And that's one of those moments where I'm almost certain that the screenwriters didn't necessarily know that, but nevertheless, we still know the idea of the impossibility of defeating a Hydra. So I just love the birth of Captain America in the movie here, kind of maps onto Heracles really nicely.
I very much appreciated your mention of Captain America as a tragic hero because after he was revived in the early 60s in the comic books, he was played that way for decades. The Winter Soldier storyline didn't happen until 2005. For the first 40 years of Captain America's modern incarnation, Bucky was dead, and Captain America felt this tremendous guilt about it, while at the same time, he's going through life with most of his colleagues and friends being dead, and he's a man out of time, and there was this very melancholy pathos about him until for decades that this was his thing. Stan Lee was very happy to play upon this man out of time thing, and the movie catches that a little bit, and the subsequent movies catch that a little bit. I love the bit in the Avengers where he's delighted that he understands the Wizard of Oz reference because everything else is a confusing blur to poor Steve. But thank you for mentioning that because one tends to think of Steve Rogers, as played by Chris Evans, as this paragon of almost Aryan virtue, this blonde-haired perfect person, and he's far from that. He's wounded and he's damaged and he's just doing the best he can.
Yeah, and I love that scene in one of the later movies with Peggy when she's an old lady and she's dying of old age and he's still kind of trapped in this almost immortal body, and That's very Achilles-like, because Achilles is the same thing. Achilles is promised that he'll die young in a blaze of glory. And yet, when Odysseus goes to the underworld in the Odyssey and meets Achilles, he says, "Achilles, surely you must be thrilled because everybody's singing about you. You're a hero. You must be Lord of the Dead." And Achilles looks at him. He said, "I'd rather be a living servant than a dead hero." And you're like, "What?" That wasn't the deal with Achilles, but that awareness that there is a cost to being a hero. Yeah, you're right. It's worked into Captain America really nicely, and that's a powerful trope that definitely goes all the way back to Gilgamesh, right? Our earliest written story. Same thing. You know, loses his best friend. You know, his Bucky Barnes is Enkidu, and Achilles' Bucky Barnes is Patroclus. But it's the same story, and it gets us every single time.
I do enjoy in the very introduction of your book, you point out that one of the earliest the earliest sense of drama, the earliest what could be drama, we're still unclear of it, is that it was basically a comic superhero, was a lion man that was found in a cave in Germany. And that's just such a, you know, it's nice knowing that comic books, something that Brian works on graphic novels, that it's nice knowing that comic books may be the first narrative that was ever put, you know, not pen to paper, but at least, you know, written on a bone.
I mean, it's amazing, right? This is the oldest kind of humanoid object that we've yet found, 40,000 years old, carved out of a mammoth tusk, which was probably the most expensive thing you could have in terms of what it took to bring down a mammoth 40,000 years ago and carve this thing. And it was found right at the back of a cave. So it's probably used for some kind of ceremony or initiation. And then, you know, what is this figure? Because it's a human body, can't tell its gender, with a lion face. And, you know, okay, ancient shamanism involves changing into animals, but you think of the masks in Marvel, you think of characters like Black Panther, you think of Captain America's mask, right? Again, this is like a really, really old kind of spiritual connection that we all have. So I kind of argue that this, in a way, is the first superhero, right? This is the earliest one we have. But I love how passionate Marvel fans get about these characters. You know, and you know, there's a sort of a joke, I think, by Mark Moran, the comic, that, you know, Marvel's become a religion to some people, right? Maybe that's a little bit extreme, but nevertheless, there is a connection to these characters that I think is really important as humans try and figure out the world they live in through these stories. So yeah, I think the idea of a kind of masked superhero, really, really old. It's the oldest one we've got.
Yeah, you mentioned just then, and you mentioned early on that myths endure because they serve a purpose, and it obviously reminded me of, you know, Joseph Campbell's Hero, A Thousand Faces work and that kind of thing. This idea that we are built to tell stories like this. These stories have a common structure through cultures, through ages. You know, the oldest myths are retold through these superhero stories, even subconsciously or unconsciously, but sometimes consciously. I mean, I think the input of different comic book writers and artists over the years is very greatly from. I don't think Stan Lee knew a lot about mythology. He had, you know, Thor talking like Shakespeare, that kind of thing. But there have been comic writers like Walt Simonson, who did a wonderful series on Thor that was basically just a straight up retelling of the Ring cycle and that kind of thing, and Ragnarok and so forth. So, a varied input, but these themes, these heroes, these stories seem to keep coming around, the structure of the stories.
Yeah, and I agree. And you know, I love Campbell, but where I kind of come at it a little bit differently to him, he had this idea of the monomyth, right? We're all telling the same story. I actually think, yeah, there are some commonalities, but I'm interested in the differences, right? I'm interested in, why is this different? What's happening here, right? Why have they changed this? That fascinates me. And you know, I do think one of the aims of my book was to kind of level up Marvel with Greek mythology and Egyptian mythology and other and Mayan, and say it's all mythology, right? This is not just pop culture. It's not just, you know, something to be thrown away. People are going to be looking at this in a couple of thousand years, right? And it's going to be saying something about us, whether we like it or not. You can't have the MCU is watched by billions of people. You can't have something that powerful as a cultural force and people not look at it and judge it. and think about it. And then think about what it's communicating about America, what it's communicating about us to the rest of the world as well. So it is a very, very powerful force, and that interests me, a great deal.
I found it interesting and somewhat metonymic with not in this movie, but in the first Avengers movie, where Natasha Romanoff is talking to Captain America, and he's like, "You need to sit this one out, Cap, because Thor and Loki are, they're from legends and they're basically gods." And Captain America turns around and said, "There's only one God, ma'am, and I'm pretty sure he doesn't dress like that." And it's like just throwing one mythological culture against another. It was just a fascinating moment.
And yeah, I love that scene. And I love the fact that Marvel also asks us, well, what is a god, right? What is Thor, right? What does that mean? And what is immortality? And these are pretty deep questions, right? That lie underneath a lot of the humor that's going on. And, Thor is with us every time we hit Thursday, right? I mean, that kind of Indo-European sky god is very common, particularly all over Europe. But I love that about Marvel, right? It kind of levels everything up, and it doesn't necessarily make any judgments about which one is right and which one is wrong. It's just all human experience trying to figure out, what is our place in the world? What is the divine? What kind of ethics should we have? How to be a hero? And, I think a lot of young men, particularly today, they're trying to figure that out, right? What path do I tread? And I think Jack Kirby, he let He left a good path, actually. I think there's a lot of value there, right? And yeah, you can argue against a lot of the choices that Cap makes, but as I say, the way they're presented in this kind of mythic world, and the way that his human individuality is enough to say to Thor, I don't have to bow down to you, right? I know what my values are. That's pretty tough.
Oh, Kirby in particular is renowned for his ethical compass and right or wrong, damn the consequences. And it's since we're kind of focused on Captain America as the focus as a subject of our film, I've always been struck in both the comics and the movies of how much respect Cap commands from those around him, even though he's not the strongest Avenger. And Thor's infinitely stronger and has thousands of years more battle experience than Captain America, but he does what Captain America tells him to do. He takes orders from Cap, and he's just in the comics, and I think even more in the movies, Captain America is the moral center of this universe. If he tells you something, you can trust it. You'll follow this man into battle, and you'll be on the right side.
And I think this clip shows that, right? Because what we have to realize is, okay, he's had the super serum. Okay, he's this, massively strong. He doesn't know that when he goes after Kruger. He's still the puny kid, right? He's a hero because that's in his ethos, right? That's his character. That's who he is, right? You could give the super serum to somebody who doesn't have that ethos, and we know that happens a lot, right, in Marvel, and it goes horrifically wrong. But actually, what makes Steve Rogers Captain America, right, is he was like that even before he got the super serum. So you put those two things together and you have this kind of amazing force of leadership. And I think, I'm a volunteer firefighter, and I work a lot with FDNY and other kind of fire chiefs and captains. And it's the quiet guys who, have all that experience and just know what they're doing, and they know that this is, there's a technical craft behind it. And I get that with Cap too, right? And he inspires people because of that solidity. So I think, he's a kind of paragon of leadership as well. I would say where he has problems is that Captain America is a really great captain, but he's not such a great general, right? And this is where Tony Stark comes in, right? Tony has the politics and the kind of corporate nous and knows how to kind of operate in those areas. But in a way, it's kind of beautiful that Cap doesn't, right? We need those people who don't have to necessarily kind of sully themselves with that kind of negotiation. And we see that in ancient Greece. We see that Odysseus is a character who will use trickery and craftiness, the wooden horse. He'll confuse the Cyclops in order to be a hero, but Achilles would never do that, right? Achilles is going to look you in the eye and he's going to fight you man on man. And I think, you know, between the two is probably where we want to be, right? Because I think if we go either route, that's problematic. But I think Cap does show us that integrity really matters when it comes to a combat leader, for sure.
I mean, as we go through, you know, this is basically a saga. It's the it what will eventually lead to the Infinity War. I mean, we add these different heroes along the way. Do you feel that kind of has a relationship to the Odyssey of meeting different set pieces and getting past the next link in the chain?
Yeah, I kind of see Infinity War as the Iliad in a way, right? As this sort of, you know, big, epic, massive war where, you know, and it's actually a good teaching tool because it's so hard for students to understand all the characters in the Iliad and how you could possibly take them all in. And then you kind of see Infinity War and you go, okay, this is exactly the same thing. And I think the Odyssey is probably the story that Marvel has yet to go on, right? And it'll be interesting to see what the Russo brothers do, right, with the next incarnation, because you know that could go either way, and we're all hoping for great genius from them. But you know, the thing about the Odyssey is it's telling us that Achilles can't come home, right? Nor can Odysseus. There needs to be some kind of development in this character in order for the hero to come home. And you also get a sense of that with Cap too. You know, we talked about that. He is a man out of time. He can't really ever come home in a way that Tony does. Tony gets to kind of come home and retire and you know, raise a family before he's pulled back into it all, of course. And that is a big question, right? Is yeah, you can go out there and you can win these battles and you can be a hero. But maybe the biggest hero is being a father, right? Or a mother and raising a family, right? And I think the Greeks and the Sumerians and the Hittites with Gilgamesh, they asked that question too. So how do you thread that needle? And I think we're asked that a lot in with Captain America.
Yeah, I was just thinking about with the end of Endgame, where you know Cap finally gets back to his Penelope was the only reason I could see the attachment there finally. Although now I you know as we're recording this, we haven't seen the next phase, so who knows how things are going to turn out with those two. Your book again is called Tony Stark, Odysseus, and the Myths Behind Marvel. Who's your publisher?
It's HarperCollins is the publisher.
Okay,
Wonderful.
and
I want to take your class.
Yeah,
yes,
you're very
me too.
welcome. Absolutely.
And I think my wife is going to swipe your book from me as soon as I'm done with it because she's a classics major, and
Right.
she said it's nice knowing that there's people with careers in classics. So
Oh,
thanks for being an
exactly.
inspiration to her. Peter, thank you so much for being a part of our show. If possible, might have you back later on in the series as we go on, if you wouldn't mind. We've got many more things to discuss about this film, and I do appreciate you being a part of this. Thanks to our audience for being with us. If you'd like to continue the conversation, we are always available out there on Facebook at Camp Lehigh, the Captain America listeners base. If you do like our show, don't forget to subscribe and leave a like at the podcast streaming service where you found this episode. And please check out our website, capminute.com, for the latest about our podcast topics and guests. And please be sure to be here next time on the Captain America Minute.
I can do this all day.